Welcome to Sci-Fi in Color, the podcast about science fiction, TV, and film featuring actors, directors, and writers of color. My name is Maggie.
And I'm Melissa. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr as SF in Color.
So, I know that there's some sound on my end. So that's my mom and sister. It's because I'm at home Thanksgiving weekend. So apologies, guys, if there's some kind of background noise. That I'm not really going to go through and edit it out. So hopefully it's not too loud. And I can't really hear you, Melissa.
Well, that's a problem, isn't it?
Huh?
That's a problem.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, just make sure you don't speak too softly because, like, I have you on the lowest volume, so I can't really hear. But, alright. So today, we're talking about Sense8 Episode 11. I didn't write down the title because the title was really long.
Yeah. Just turn the wheel and the future changes.
Oh, right. That's what Kala says, right?
Yes. When she's talking to Wolfgang.
Right. So, just a quick thing, since we've talked about it before, like, Leto has usually provided the title name, but, yes. Like, Leto's not even in this episode, like, at all. Like,
yeah,
we don't even get, like a two-second check-in with him. He's just not here.
Yeah. That was kind of a weird artistic choice for me. Like, how long... I mean, yes, I understand, like, resolving his plot and whatever last episode. And, like, I understand he doesn't have any conflict and he's all good and he's in love and blah, blah, blah. But, like... We couldn't have had, like, a 30-second check-in of them being happy. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah. I'm sure there's some way he could have tied into the plot, you know? But apparently not.
It's weird.
It is weird.
I miss Leto, you know?
Yeah.
I miss Hernando. I miss Jenny.
Well, I mean, they were in the last episode, but sure, yeah. Like, it would have been nice to check in with them, because every other episode we've had at least, like, a two-second check-in with, like, other people, you know?
Yeah, I can't really think of another episode where you don't get, like, anything. I mean, like, sometimes it's just, like, a split second of somebody, but...
But even then, that's something.
Yeah. I guess this episode didn't have time for a musical montage, so...
Oh, well, I didn't need no musical montage. I just wanted some kind of, like, I don't know. Like, it's Sense8, not Sense7. I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just saying, man. Like, it was weird that Leto didn't... I mean, I guess it was kind of like, oh, we're done with his storyline. We don't see him. But, like, until the finale. But, like, that's kind of lame.
I guess we're just supposed to assume that everything's good. Like, just imagine him being happy.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
But what'd you think about the episode?
I enjoyed the episode. I guess it went into places that I didn't think it was going to go to, which was cool for me.
Like what?
Like, I didn't expect... I didn't expect Whispers to be manipulating Jonas.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't expect, like, Kala to kind of stand up against that religious leader. I don't know. I mean, like, I didn't expect Son's dad to be dead. That's not the father who I thought was going to die. I thought it was going to be Riley's dad.
The father must die.
Wachowskis. But, I mean, the father must die. But the question now is,
which
father
one
must die? So I was totally
now you're asking the right
it was going
questions.
To be Riley's father. But instead, it was Son's father. So that was interesting. I'm thinking about this AV Club review I read after watching the episode and after taking my notes, and it was kind of going on the fact of, like, it's weird that this episode was, like, super violent, and it kind of goes against, like, to that writer, it kind of went against the whole theme or idea of, like, human connectedness in Sense8. Like, I can link to the article, but mm-hmm. It was, like, so they're doing all these, like, what makes Cafius better than, say, Kobaka, if he's just, like, killing and chopping up all these gangsters, even though he's, like, you know, Son's kind of doing it, but, like, you know, like, the morality of it. But, like, clearly Sense8's not interested in, like, that side of things, so it's kind of, like, yeah, like, how do you justify that, I guess?
That was a very violent moment, which it was hard, it was visually easy to justify, because
right.
We needed Son to be visibly angry because she didn't have a way to do that in her own life, basically.
Right.
I think that was a good representation of her and what she is going through. But in terms of, like, the actual, like, nitty-gritty of, like,
chopping people's heads, yeah, he, like, just killed, like, 20 whatever. People, right?
Yeah, that was... It was pretty gruesome.
Yeah. So
and we're basically just supposed to accept it because they're the bad guys, you know?
Yeah, and the cool factor and whatever, right? But... So I kind of get that. But also, it's like, yeah, it's, like, kind of brings up some, like, weird moral questions. Like you're just okay that you just killed a bunch of guys? Like, what? I don't know. The way I saw it was kind of like the classic TV thing where it's like, oh, self-defense, right? Like, he gave them choices. He's like, let's handle this like man. Let's, like, fight one-on-one. Or, I don't know. Like, he didn't. Like, they're the ones who, like, kind of...
Yeah, they're definitely like, the ones... They're the ones who escalated the situation. They continued right. to escalate throughout his scenes. But...
But it still doesn't justify.
Yeah, like, he still killed a lot of people. Yeah. And, I mean, we can get into it once we get into that part of the show, but...
It was kind of funny that, like, that woman who was just standing at the top of the warehouse just looking at everything was just like, Van effing damn. And I was like, oh, okay. Weird.
Yep.
But I guess someone has to witness the scene and tell the tale to everyone and spread his, I don't know, street cred or whatever, so... That was a weird... moment, but I understood why it was there. It's like you know, the old lady on the bus way back in, like, the beginning of the season. Like, there has to be someone to witness what Caffeus is doing so they can report back and tell everyone mm-hmm. about it. But there's gonna be a woman because Caffeus isn't gonna kill a chick because he's Caffeus, apparently.
Right. I just have a theory, but I can't share the theory with you because I
have a theory.
And it's a demon. A dancing demon. No, something isn't right. No. I have a theory, but I just need to watch the next episode to make sure that I'm not... Ooh. This actually is a theory, and I'm not just remembering something. Because that's okay. happened.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Are you going to write this down?
Yes, I'll write it down. Because otherwise, I will not remember my theory.
Yeah. You know, I remember I postulated some kind of theory about Sense8 back in, like, episode 2 or 3. And I was like, I gotta remember this for later when we finish the season, but I honestly to God don't remember what it is. I just remember telling myself that I need to remember it. But
that's not very helpful. That happens.
Right? human memory.
Okay. So who do you want to start with?
I mean, I'm looking at my notes chronologically and they're really vague. Like, they're really, really vague.
Okay, mine are not vague.
So I don't know if you want to start, like, you want to kind of start and give me structure to go off of.
I'll give you structure, Maggie. I don't know why I said it like
that. That sounds really weird, but okay.
Let's start with Caffeus, because we were just talking about Caffeus.
Sure.
I basically Caffeus. Divided the episode, as I do, into the different characters. It is becoming increasingly difficult, because they're increasingly interconnected.
Right.
But Caffeus is pretty separate, so he's all good.
Right.
So he starts off by dropping Mr. Kabaka's daughter with his friend because he has to settle a debt, I think is the wording he used.
Honestly, it's been such a long time since we've even talked about Caffeus' storyline in the season that, like, I barely remember. Like, I know the gang member was like, or the former gang member was like, well, Kabaka killed my sister, so now I need you to help me get revenge on him, and if you don't do this, then I'll kill your mom, or blah blah. Like, but that's like, that was such a long time ago, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, story-wise, I think it happened like 3 episodes ago, and I guess if you're binging, it's not much of a deal, because you watched it, you know, a few hours ago, but, you know, we're not binging, and it's honestly, even if you are binging, you get really forgetful. Like, you get really into something. It's a long time to have just left him just in a state of indecision. Like, what do I do now? You know?
Yeah, I mean, like, we do get a reminder. Like, the former gang member does say, don't you, like, he basically says, don't you remember that we are here because Kabaka killed us? Like, he basically says that
he's
audience, but, like, still, it was like, kind of weird.
Yeah, it was a nice little reminder, because I couldn't quite remember of all the things that had gotten us to this point, because, like,
right.
Cassius was clearly horrified by the entire situation that he had found himself in, but I couldn't quite remember why. And then I remember the hand cutting off stuff, and I was like, oh yeah, that's kind of gross.
Which is why the whole him attacking everyone else and him cutting off someone else's hand was so, like, weird to me, because it was, like, a weird callback to that scene, but then from, like, the opposite end where he was the attacker. And I was like, this is strange. Yeah.
It's hard to figure out where the lines of self-defense end and where, like, cruelty and over-violence, I guess, really begins. Because,
geez, like, that was pretty gross seeing that hand fly off. Ugh.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's particularly more violent, at least in terms of blood, over previous episodes. Because they've had moments which have been...
Violent,
bloody. And relatively gory. Not, like, super bad. Like, nothing that's turned my stomach.
Right.
But things that are, you know, not particularly pleasant. It didn't feel out of the show in terms of the actual bloodiness.
No, I guess it's a weird... The difference was, like, we've seen Cassius in fight scenes, but generally he's not killing people, so it was kind of a weird... No,
that's definitely strange. But anyway, so Cassius drops the daughter to his friends, and he says that somebody is going to be by to collect her. And it was Kathy says that somebody's going...
Does he say that?
I believe so.
That's odd.
And that felt really strange to me, because I think we're supposed to start wondering about whose side he's on, but...
Oh. Well, I was never, like, torn about what side he was on.
Well, did you think he was going to turn her in?
Well, he's part of the main cast. He's not going to do it. He's a quote-unquote good person, so, like, he's not going to sacrifice a child. That doesn't make sense.
That's true.
I mean, just through law of main character, like, he's never been set up as an anti-hero, so, like, he's not gonna start being that kind of person now.
It would be interesting if one of Fate was an anti-hero. Right. But that's a different story.
But even it feels like nowadays anti-heroes are played out, or, like, overdone.
I actually hate anti-heroes. I think we've talked about this before, yeah. But the short version is just... I hate them, and I find them extremely unsympathetic, so when they do bad things, I don't care, and I basically want to stop. I do not like them.
That was your Daredevil problem, wasn't it?
I did finish Daredevil, the first season. Netflix can get me to watch the first season, but it is so hard to get me to watch number two. I don't know why.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, I may have mentioned this before, but I could not get past... Like, the newest season of Orange is the New Black, like, I watched the first episode and I just didn't care. And I just couldn't get through. And, like, which is weird because I found season two and season one very compelling. And season three was, like, okay, but, like, I just couldn't get past episode one of season four. So, like, I don't know. That's, like, kind of, like, maybe I'll get to it, but probably not. But, yeah, back to Cassius. Yeah, I was thinking, one of my notes was, how many countries drive on the left? ? I mean, I know Great Britain does. Apparently, people in Kenya do, but, like, I was like, how many other countries drive on the left? This is interesting.
I believe... And then... I can't tell you a number, but...
Right. It's a very low number, because most people drive on the right. Yeah,
most people drive on the right. And I believe the ones that drive on the left have, like, English colonialism history. I can't promise that. This is just
being... I'm not 100% sure about that. I don't know about specifically... I know in Hong Kong, at least... I don't know if Hong Kong... Oh, no, yeah. Definitely Hong Kong, they drive on the left because they used to be a British colony.
I can't speak specifically about Kenya, but I know a lot of the ones that
Kenya
do...
I don't think Kenya's a colony, so that was weird to me. But...
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I've seen arguments for why left-hand driving is superior to right-hand driving or whatever. I don't care. I live in a place where we drive on the right, and most people in the world drive on the right, so get with it, guys. Sorry, that was incredibly callous of me. But, I don't know. I was just, like,
nobody kind has
of
making a note.
Oh, yeah, Kathy's driving on the left side of the road. Huh?
Nobody has that strong feelings about driving
anything. Listen, people will have very strong feelings about, like, anything.
That's true.
Listen. So, Cassius, one thing I like that they did visually with his wardrobe was, like, what he was wearing versus what everyone else in, like, the gangs were wearing was a big contrast. Like, he was wearing these kind of bright colored, I don't know if professional clothing is the right word, but, like pressed, like, khakis and, like, a dress shirt. And, like, everyone else was wearing dark, I guess, stereotypically hoodlum-type clothing or whatever. But, like, it was a nice visual contrast. When I saw him versus everyone else, mm-hmm. it was, like, this bright spot and then, like, all this kind of, like, grungy, like, darkness around him, I guess, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
I wasn't sure if that's something that Kaffis has been doing. Has he been wearing bright clothing this whole time? I think so. It didn't really stick out to me until this very moment when I saw this episode. So that was kind of cool.
I like how they basically made Kaffis look, you know, different than the other hoodlums, is the word you used. I didn't notice the wardrobe as much, but I did notice, like, the confrontation that Kaffis has with, like, the lead gangster in the beginning. And the way that it was shot, it kept kind of emphasizing, like, how short Kaffis was. Did you see that? Because, like, it kept, like, looking up and then looking down, and you could kind of just see, like, there's an obvious height comparison, but it just kept emphasizing it. I kept noticing it over and over about how short Kaffis was compared to this
guy. I'm not good at noticing things like that, but I mean, it was definitely an intentional thing to make him seem more vulnerable and, you know, like, he's not the one in power here, at least in the beginning, right?
No.
So.
Well, not at all. What did you really think of? No, he's not really in power at all. Like, even
right, until, like, Sun helps him out, I guess. Well,
even when he starts killing people, I wouldn't call that in power.
Right, because it's kind of like Sun's just kind of taken over.
Yeah, basically.
It's interesting. He doesn't really have that much agency, which is, well, unless he's driving, then he has more agency when he's driving.
Yeah, that's his great
that's
skill.
That's his thing. Right.
But, I mean, I didn't really worry about his agency, because he's the one who decided to come to confront the gangsters, and that was enough for me, because it took him a long time to think about it, definitely.
Yeah, having courage and stuff, right?
But yeah, but he made the right choice eventually. You know what I liked? When he was driving in, and, you know, he's driving in on his van.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's looking all determined, and then, like, they're showing the eyes on the van.
Yeah.
And, like, they were also looking determined, and I was just, like, it just geared me up so much, you know?
I love the fact that they did that with the van. I mean, they did that in an earlier episode, right, when he's, chasing after the gangsters, and it just zooms in on those, like, fierce eyes in the front, and, comes back in play, like, later on in the episode where he's kind of squaring off against that guy on the motorbike. I don't know, they're just fantastic. They just are really cool.
They fit him very well, which I don't know how much I agreed with earlier on in the episodes, because I think earlier on it was kind of more accidental how he ended up falling into all these problems, but you know, now he's decided to get himself out.
Right.
He is not in a good spot.
Right. Just thinking, well, again, wardrobe-wise, I really liked the main villain's gloves. They were just, like,
really
cool.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Right? I was definitely not going to mention it because I didn't write it down, but now that you mentioned that, I was like,
they were so cool. I don't remember what they look like, but I just remember thinking, wow, those are some amazing gloves.
They were, black, and they had, like, this silver over, like, the back of the hand.
Yeah, I think I want to say there's, like, chains and stuff on it.
It looked
really cool.
It looked so cool. Like, I could never pull that off because I'm 5'2" and I look like a 13-year-old, but, you know, true. Like, I wish I could. I wish that was
who I
was.
Well, you just look like an emo teenager.
That's true.
Which would be even worse.
That's not pulling it off.
Weird noises. It sounds like someone's banging on my mailbox. What is going on?
Mailbox crimes are up 15% this year.
I don't know if, like, the mailman just is, like, really fumbly today or something. It just sounds really weird. And also another thing, this is kind of a random aside, and maybe I'll throw in the show notes, but I just started reading this comic called Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. It's a Marvel comic, and it's really freaking good.
Yeah.
And a quick summary, it's basically this, like, super genius 9-year-old black girl who lives on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. She is kind of, like, isolated at school and, like, doesn't have friends and whatever. And then through Marvel hijinks, I guess, somehow becomes, everyone from my family's, like, coming home now. Through, like, hijinks, like, and she's, like, also, because it's Marvel, right? So she's kind of, like, an inhuman, kind of like Miss Marvel, you know, Kamala Khan.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, they're kind of like X-Men, I guess you could say. Like, you know, there's, like, a thing that triggers their genes, and they transform into something that with superpowers. So anyway, whatever. She has this, like, dinosaur sidekick called Devil Dinosaur. And this little girl, so the main character of the story, she's, like, so... They constantly emphasize, like, how small she is and how, like, ignored she is. And again, I didn't notice this, but AV Club, because I love AV Club, pointed it out. But, like, in certain chapters, right, like, they're, like, she's, like, barely in the frame, like, the top of her head, or, like, they just emphasize how small she is, because kind of, like, how, like, even though she's, like, super smart and, like, basically the smartest person in the world, like, everyone ignores her, wants her to be something else, and this and that. So, like, I don't know. That's kind of what I remembered when you were talking to me about how Caffeus is, like, made to look very small in the frame and things like that. Like, they did a similar thing with Moon Girl. Or her name is, like, Lunella Lafayette. They did the same thing with that character in the comic series that I was reading yesterday. So, I don't know. Also, it's just, like, a really good comic series. Like, I really enjoy it. So, I 10 out of 10 recommend. I'll link to it in the show notes. It's a good series. But yeah. So, I guess back to Caffeus.
Yes. So he, the lead gangster, basically, takes the machete. It is a machete, right? I always get confused about how to specifically refer to sharp weaponry. Like, what qualifies as machete? But I kind of want to
look up what a machete is, but I want to say machete is used generally to, like, hack through foliage or plants.
Like in Tarzan.
Are there machetes in Tarzan? I never really watched it.
You need to watch Tarzan. It's not even my favorite Disney movie, but you have to watch Tarzan. That's like a law of humanity. Aww. Okay, it's not that good.
Phil Collins is really great. A machete is a broad, so this is from my dictionary on my computer, a broad heavy knife used as an implement or weapon originating in Central America and the Caribbean, and it's the origin is from Spanish, from macho, which means hammer. So somehow we got hammer into a machete, which is strange to me.
That's pretty weird. Is machete curved? Oh, this is so a tangent. I
think you're thinking about a scimitar or a scimitar. Well, I can show you, like, I'm looking at the shape of a machete right now because it's in the dictionary, but, like, I don't want to flip my Skype screen until you can see it.
Let's just move on and just refer to it as a machete.
As a machete, yeah.
Like, that's, we're just going to do that.
I think the shape of it looks like what was in the show. Okay. I think it's a machete. He has that machete and is, like, doesn't he kind of fake slash at Caffeus with it?
Yeah.
And he kind of flinches a little bit.
But, you know, not too much. Not to make him look like a coward or whatever.
He did better than anything I would do. I would probably be, like, crying.
Yeah. So, Caffeus is, like, we're gonna settle this, like, men, right? And then the... I don't know if he has a name, but I'm just calling him lead gangster.
Right.
And so he says, like, men, you're hilarious. I like you, Van Damme. And, like... Everybody likes this kid. Like, even the people, like, he's, like, everybody likes Caffeus. And that could be a problem, like, but it's not, because I like Caffeus, you know? He's just... Yeah.
He's likable.
Yeah, he's... Even though he's in, like, a bad situation, like, he's still a good person, and he's brave, and he's thoughtful, and he has all of these really nice character traits that just make him... It's okay that everybody likes him, because it's okay. He's great. I like him too, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's really confusing about what Caffeus's plan and all of this was. Because, like...
Well, he said he didn't really have much of a plan going in, right? He was like, I don't even expect to save you.
Like...
He's like, it just happened.
Well, yeah. Like, obviously he couldn't have planned for any of this to happen, but like, it's just very strange that he would just go there and be like, I'm gonna go there and I'm gonna die and then they're gonna come for the girl and cool. That was a great time.
Right, like maybe he didn't think it through.
But he did think it through. He had 2 episodes to think it through.
What does that translate to in real time? Like 2 days?
It's really hard to say. I don't know.
Yeah, because we don't really get super delineated days in this show.
It actually makes
kind of happen.
That actually reminds me of an issue that I don't want to get too far into, but just note essentially that, you know, we switch between back and forth and, you know, as we switch through the characters, I don't really pay that much attention to where it's day and where it's night, but I don't think that is done accurately. I don't want to...
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Like, with the time differences and whatever. It's hard to say because I don't really track it, but then you could always just say, oh, it's the next day, or, you know, whatever. But I don't know. It's hard to say about
that. Well, there's the international timeline or dateline or whatever it is, right?
Mm.
In between, I'd say, like, Hawaii and like the rest of the Pacific Islands.
No,
it's like
somewhere
there. But then, yeah, like sometimes they allude to the time difference, right? When like Sun says like I was sleeping.
Right.
But not always.
Yeah.
And even then it's kind of funky, right? Because Caffeus is in Africa. So Sun's like what? Not super far away in terms of where she's on the globe, but then like what? Riley's in Iceland and that's just added a couple more hours off to Caffeus's time, and it's like,
yeah, it should be basically
kind of funky.
It should be a different time of day, basically, for everybody, but that's not always what we get.
Yeah, I mean, my assumption is that the writers are not caring about the time differences, really.
Yeah, well, like neither do I.
Well, yeah. I mean, we haven't talked about it until just now, so,
yeah. It doesn't bother me. But anyway, back to Caffeus. You know what I really liked was the warehouse set, like, the inside. Like, I don't know why, but it was, like, really detailed. And, like, inside it, like, you could see, like, it wasn't like it was too dark, but it was, you know, it was relatively dark. But you could see kind of the light coming on from, like, there seemed to be, like, windows from, like, the very top.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, the light was coming in from, like, the very top. And I don't know, it just looked really cool.
Yeah. I have some interesting, or I have some comments about some of the lighting in other parts of the episode, but yeah, I thought the warehouse looked really cool. I mean, I don't remember too much, sorry, I don't remember too much about, like, what it looked like, but it was definitely dressed well, because sometimes
like
it's just, like, when you have, like, a fight in a warehouse, it just looks really, like the set looks kind of underdressed, or, like, tacky, or, like, for some reason off, but it looked and felt right.
Yeah, like, when it's too empty, it just kind of looks fake. Like, they just picked, like,
right,
a set to just fight. I don't know.
Yeah, like, Static Shock when he's, like, walked into a warehouse and it's, like, literally, like the animators didn't get paid that day or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I do.
Yeah, it needs to be dressed, but it looked pretty good. Yeah, I don't know. I found it interesting that Kabaka was, like, kind of, like, whimpering, I guess. Because, like, I guess I didn't expect that. I thought he would try to be, like, I guess, macho or strong to the right end, but it didn't appear that way.
No, he seems just completely shell-shocked that this had even happened to him. Like, he just, like, he hadn't processed it. He wasn't, like, putting on, like, a brave face. He was just like, how on earth did I get here? This is not good. But, you know, one thing that kind of bothered me about the scene was how very, like, sexist essentially the language was.
Oh yeah, that was super gross and misogynistic.
Yeah.
Oh god, it was getting I was like, wow, these guys are awful human beings.
Like, it was just like, your sister died, like, respect her, please. Like,
well, apparently it doesn't go, he wasn't thinking about it that way, right?
Well, I was, and it was just because, like, you know, they were referring to Mr. Kabaka, like, as a B word,
right,
and recalling him she, and it was like, you know, meant very demeaning, and
right,
it was just very, made me very uncomfortable.
Oh yeah, same. But I mean, I wonder if, you know, you're saying like you see that as like being contradictory. I wonder if it's actually, if it can be seen as like almost compliment, like like, maybe thinking about their society being very much male-dominated, and, like, he was supposed to protect his sister or something. You know what I mean? Thinking about it that way.
Yeah, I can see that, but...
I don't know. Like, even just thinking about how all the men in this particular culture, in this particular, like, subsection of the story seem to treat mothers, sisters, and daughters. I mean, does that make sense?
No, I definitely understand. Like, culturally, it sort of makes sense. It just kind of felt weird, maybe because Sense8 is, for the audience that Sense8 is made for, I guess. Right. From that perspective, rather than being, like, culturally accurate, though I'm obviously not an expert.
Yeah, I don't know how culturally accurate this is. I'm just saying based off of the show and what I've seen in the show. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how, I don't know culturally how Kenya is.
Right.
In real life. But I haven't done any, like, in-depth research on it.
Nor do we have to.
Right.
But, yeah, you have seen it in the show because, you know, the two things go very hand in hand, you know, having an overprotective male culture where, like, the men have to kind of protect the women. That goes hand in hand with having, you know, some misogyny issues, essentially.
Right. I don't know. I was just thinking, like, maybe it's not as contradictory as you make it out to be. Maybe it's, like, two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, I can see that because...
But you don't think it's a strong argument?
Like, no, I don't think it's that strong to me. At least, maybe that's going more political than, like, in the show itself. Like, not right. Character-wise. I just think that's a contradictory position to take. Right. But, I don't know, it's not worth dwelling on, I guess.
I think I deciphered what I wrote down in my notebook that I showed you earlier. I think what I meant to write was, isn't sharp. But I didn't write down the N.
Oh.
I wrote I apostrophe ST, but I forgot the N in there. For isn't. So, I think that was referring to when... the lead gangster hands Kafius a machete and says it isn't sharp or, like, not sharp enough or whatever.
Ew.
Because I was thinking, well, first of all, that's a lie because he's cleanly sliced through that guy's arm.
Yeah. Like,
isn't sharp, my butt. Very sharp. Like, you have to hack a few times, like, okay, dude, with your psychological mind games. And, like, also, you know, like, the classic Into the Badlands swing when it kind of scrapes against something, like... Yeah. It's pretty sharp, dude. We know you sharpened it before.
This whole moment actually reminded me a lot of Into the Badlands. Because,
you're right.
You know, it was one guy being like, hey, I'm going to murder everybody. Or at least defend myself against everybody.
Right. Yeah, it was like him facing off a bunch of people in a warehouse. Like, that was like episode one, right?
Yeah.
And also, guys, if you haven't listened to our Into the Badlands episode, you are missing out. Those are some good times. You should, like... I don't know. If you haven't listened to the Into the Badlands episodes yet, you really should. It's a good time.
Yeah, that was a good time. For some of our first episodes, though, so they were a little rough.
It's a little rough, but sure, but it's enjoyable.
Yeah, but one of the reasons I really thought about Into the Badlands is because when you watch Into the Badlands, you don't worry about the morality as much. About, like, it's just
right.
Sunny going around and killing people. And yes, there is some... like, oh, is this the right thing to do, blah blah blah, but, like, in the moment, in the fight scene, that's not really a concern.
Yeah, it's, we're not, like, really contemplating the morals of things.
It's just
while,
like,
the fight scene's happening,
cool,
that's usually, like,
death
the after
moment
or before, right?
Yeah, just cool death things.
Just
cool death things,
hashtag.
Yeah, but I guess one of the questions I had in the scene was, well, it's not a question, I know the answer probably, but it's, like, has Sun killed before?
Oh, yeah, that's interesting, right?
Because, I mean, I think the obvious answer is no, most people haven't.
Well, she's in jail now, so I guess she doesn't care. Sorry, that's horribly insensitive. But yeah. I mean, I don't think she was killed before.
Yeah, that's the obvious answer. But, like, she... It's almost like, to her, it was a dream, you know?
Like, yeah, like, probably, I don't know if she was aware that she actually, like, killed 20 people.
Yeah, I don't know if she was.
And also, it kind of makes you think, like, you know, well, this is her reacting to the idea that her brother has killed her father. So, like, I kind of get it. Like, he killed him, and I want to kill my brother, and I can't. Yes. But, like, also, no. Like, that doesn't... That's not equal at all. Like, wow. What just happened?
I mean, it's a good... I said this before. It's a good visual representation of her frustration. And, you know, she's trapped in prison, so we don't get that. We don't get to really see her reaction besides punching a wall.
Yeah, I think, like, if this was a show rooted in reality where there weren't these astral projection type things, like, we would see Sun, like, beating the crap out of people in prison. Like, that woman she totally, like, destroyed, like, what, an episode or two ago, right? You know, the bully?
Yeah.
Right? Who threw paint on her mural. Like, I feel like we just see her get into more fights and maybe not necessarily, like, hurt or destroy anyone. Okay, so I think we're taking a break because Melissa just walked out of the frame. Okay, and we're back again. Interruptcast.
That's what happens.
It's only a matter of time before Interruptcast came back. So yeah, I think I basically mentioned my thing about Sun over and over again, so hopefully y'all have it in your head by now. Maybe I could just cut that whole thing I said out before, but...
Yeah, probably.
Right, I don't know if there's anything else with Caphias. Is there?
There's just a few things to know.
Oh, right, the whole chase scene.
Well, yeah. Like, you know, we were talking about Into the Badlands before, and it feels almost Into the Badlands unbelievable what Sun does in this scene. We talked about, like, the morality, right. Yeah, but... The actual physical things that she does, it's pretty crazy that she takes down, like, I don't know how many, a dozen.
Yeah, like, how does she's, we've seen her in the past do, like, what, kickboxing against, like, a one-on-one kickboxing. So how is she, like, how is she suddenly capable of killing, like, 20 people with a machete when she's a kickboxer?
It felt pretty.
It's a little weird.
Weird to me. Oh, The one thing that I didn't mention before when we were talking about the misogyny in the scene is that they're talking to Caphias about it, but they're also talking to Sun, who's been having some misogyny issues. That was the point that I kind of forgot about. And it's, you know, she's, and it reminds me again of that scene in the prison with you know, the other women, where the other women are like, yeah, kill my husband, and it's great. And so there is kind of this, I'm going to call it male versus female, because that's not what I'm going for, but,
right,
like, you know, cultural issues kind of continuously brought up.
Right, yeah. It's interesting to think of that, like Caphias's space is pretty much all male for most of his chunk of the episode, whereas, like, Sun is in a space where it's, like, all females, right?
So, yes.
Yeah, it's really... And then, you know, I mean, we do get the brother comes to visit, but, like... And that's really strange, but... Yeah.
That's a whole nother issue, man.
You want to transition into Sun's?
Yeah, after we finish Caphias, but, you know, we have the car chase. And, you know, it's funny. I totally forgot about this car chase, like, until... Caphias is, like, driving away, and I'm like, oh my god, did I completely forget about this? And it all just came rushing back about, like, this
car chase, car chase, car chase, car chase.
In my memories, it lasted a lot longer. I mean, like, it lasted a fine amount, but it just felt like it went on forever the first time I watched it.
So we get that excellent car chase where he's like trying to gun that Van Damme van through the highway, get Mr. Kabaka to his daughter, without, you know, having anyone kill them or stay on their tail or whatever. Then, of course, traffic jam, because of course. And then you get all these crazy... I mean, we get Will, right, with his gun training, stepping in to help.
Yeah, that was pretty sweet.
So there's a gun battle, and then Cassius somehow ends up turning onto the other side of the highway and going in the complete wrong direction and not dying.
That's one of those like mandatory things in car chase scenes. Like, you just have to be driving the wrong way at some point. And like, it was fine. I mean, those don't really get me going, but, you know, to each their own.
And then they square off. It's just the van versus the head leader guy. So I don't know what he thinks he's doing. I mean, first of all, I guess it's kind of unbelievable that Cassius hasn't been shot at all throughout the whole thing.
I kept thinking about that, because, like, there's so many bullet marks.
How, dude?
On the van. It hasn't shattered the glass. It hasn't... I mean,
Didn't even, like, graze his, like, leg or anything. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, at least something.
Like, and there are holes, like, in the windshield. And they're right over Cassius. But apparently...
It's like, how are you still alive, dude? But whatever, chalk it up to... I don't know, can't kill the main characters off, or maybe he just had some, like, what's that potion in Harry Potter? Felix something or other. What's it?
Felix Felices? I can't remember if that's the right pronunciation. Yeah,
something like that. I was like, I don't understand how he's alive. But, I mean, when it got really crazy, it was when that guy was squaring off against him. Just like, the one motorbike and the van. And I'm like,
dude,
he's going to hit you with the van and you're going to die. I mean, there's not really, unless you shoot him right in the face as he's coming at you. But even that, like, you're going to, like, that's, like, that was, like, the weirdest showdown ever. Because, like, he was so clearly outmatched, you know?
Yeah.
I don't understand the logic of that. But then again, I don't understand the logic of telling someone to use a machete to kill the man who killed your sister. I mean, like, whatever.
Yeah, that was a little kind of somewhat of a letdown that was, like, his big plan. Because, you know, his original plan was to kill his daughter in front of him. And I'm like, that's a pretty solid plan. I would respect that plan.
You cruel-hearted person. But yeah, no, that's a pretty solid plan.
Yeah, it's a good plan. I like the plan. But then Cassius doesn't bring the daughter. And he's like, change of plans. We can't keep him alive for, you know, the week it would take to find the daughter. You know, let's just have Cassius do it. Because I haven't just been thinking about revenge for the past year. I also have some expediency issues.
Right?
Like, no, this is your big revenge. You gotta be bold. You gotta wait. You gotta put everything into timing. You gotta just... Come on.
Yeah, bigger, I don't know. I mean, I guess we only had... Man. I guess it was the penultimate episode, right? So it's not like... I mean, it is the penultimate episode of the season.
But... I don't know if... Maybe, you know, have more of a build-up in some of the previous episodes and take a few minutes away from other things and just, you know, have this...
Well, change of plans.
Like, have the big grand confrontation, like, in this episode. But, like, you know, maybe do some searching for the daughter. I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah, they were kind of like, well, daughter's not here, and I guess we were counting on that, so... Whatever.
Yeah, it's kind of... It was just weird. One thing...
Oh, can I say... sorry, this is just flashing back way before to when they're in the warehouse, but I kind of... It was so, like, grim, but also... And morbid, but also kind of cool that, like, they were filming the whole things on their phones.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that was, like... Dang. Like, I don't know. For some reason, I guess, like, it's just, like...
No, yeah.
It's just kind of, like, the horrible things we record... and kind of post onto the internet, and I don't know, it was interesting to me. Yeah. And, you know, anything that's meta, like recording in a recording, it's like always works for me.
It actually made me think of don't judge me for this, but it made me think of Twilight.
Twilight? How so?
There's a scene at the end of the first book/movie. Where like the evil vampire is like,
wait, can you speak up? I keep really doing this thing where I lean in closer to the computer screen and thinking I'll hear you louder, but you're not actually a person in front of me, so it's not working.
This is about as loud as we're getting. So it reminds me of Twilight. The evil vampire basically lures the main character to like the spot that he chose, and he's gonna kill her slowly and record it and memorialize it and show it to all the people and be like, look what I did, I'm great. Not exactly like that. He just, his voice is a little different and he has good hair. But that's, it did remind me of that, like a little bit of like a gloating, like, something to remember it by.
Well, it's confirmation, right? It's confirmation that they have done the deed and they can prove it.
Yeah.
But it's also, like, really sick and gross and horrible.
Yeah. That's pretty much, yeah. In the, like, the traffic jam scene, I don't know if you noticed this, but, like, a lot of the cars were empty.
Oh. I wasn't paying attention, but, like, yeah, I guess they don't actually want to kill extras.
No, it definitely makes sense. And, like, it really didn't matter that much. Like, it was pretty dark, and I was, you know, I was looking pretty closely. But, like, they were pretty empty.
But that's, like, the Pacific... Again, I'm just kind of throwing back to our previous episode. That's, like, the Pacific Rim thing, right? Where, like, the director doesn't want you to think that people are actually dying, you know, or civilians are getting hurt. They just want the spectacle of cars being destroyed or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Also, just for practicality reasons.
Yeah, like logistically.
Hire a bunch of extras to sit in cars and just kind of sit there.
Yeah, logistically it makes sense, but...
But yeah, I did not notice that the cars were empty. That's interesting. Yeah, so I mean, I'm just trying to think of anything else with Cafius. Like, I liked how when he came back, like, the whole van is just riddled with bullet holes. I mean, even though we're talking about the practicality of that and how is he still alive, like, visually, it looked really cool that the bullet-ridden van was just kind of pulling into that complex. And then,
we get our reunion.
There's really much anything else to say.
I mean, we just get the reunion between, you know, everybody. He brings Mr. Kabaka home, and he reunites with his daughter, and it's a nice moment. I mean,
it was like a weird moment, though. You know,
it was weird because, like,
because it's like, well, he's still like, the bad did you guy. Really do the best thing by saving the sky?
Yeah.
So it was a weird moment to me.
Yeah, he did.
It was, I guess, it was supposed to be like sweet, but it was also like just really strange.
Yeah, I mean, he did the best moment. Like, this is the best result, I guess, for her, the daughter.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, she would have lost both of her parents. But it was weird, yeah, because it's not like he's the good guy, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like, the other guys are definitely still bad guys, but he's also still a bad guy. It's not resolved. Like, it's, yes, it feels resolved, but it's not.
Right. So that was strange to me.
But that's
sorry,
all
I keep yawning because I'm so tired. But yeah, I think that's it for Cafius, right?
Do you want to talk about...
So shall we move on to San?
Yes, San. She doesn't really get that much, though. It's like, not minute by
minute. But she's connected to Cafius.
Right, minute by minute she doesn't like get as much screen time, but it's still like big revelations are being had.
Right, so... We find out that she has a meeting with her brother, and it's like, what is, for me, first time viewer, I was like, what is happening? What is going on? I was like, and Azula was like, what is this underlighting thing that's happening in this prison? I mean, I know we've established that Sun's prison has, like, no budget whatsoever, and they, like, keep the lights turned off, like, all the time. But, like, seriously, like, there was some weird, funky underlighting stuff going on where, like, they lit up her, like, jaw, but we couldn't see the rest of her face, and I was like, what is happening? So she walks in, talks to her brother, or more like her brother talks at her.
Yes.
And he tells a story about how the father was found dead because some kind of, what was it even? Like, it was seemed like it was suicide.
Yeah.
Because shame or gas or something, and it was like...
He was like, shame killed our father. I was like, dude.
No, shame did not kill your father. A person killed your father, or the unlikely event that your father killed himself, but someone killed him. It and shame did not kill him. Shame is not, like, what are you talking about, dude? So that instantly pissed me off, and then I was like Son, like, this kind of dawning realization, like, did he kill the dad? But then I don't even know, man, because, like, part of me is thinking, well, like, what if some other nefarious person was involved, like Whispers or something, you know? Like, I don't. Because I don't know if I think it's possible that the brother killed the father, but I also think it's possible that someone else killed the father. I'm leaning towards someone else did it, because, like, I don't know, the brother was super weird about it, but, like, I honestly don't think the brother killed him. Because it seems like a weird choice to taunt someone with that knowledge. Like, I don't know. I feel like he would have been better off if he hadn't said anything to Sun at all and didn't let her know. But, I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm overthinking this. It just seems like a very sociopathic or psychopathic move. And, I mean, maybe that fits with the brother. But I don't know, because we haven't seen the brother in a long time.
Yeah.
So
the way that I thought,
yeah, I don't know. I think it's possible that the brother killed him. I think it's possible that someone else, like someone a part of Whisper's organization, killed him. I mean, I don't really think that the father killed himself, because that seems to go against what he was saying before, that he was going to get Sun out of jail. But it was a weird thing. It was a weird thing.
The way that I was kind of thinking about it was that her brother has basically had someone to take the fall for him his whole life. Right. And he has never, he's constantly trying to, you know, hide his true intentions. And, you know, he got in trouble initially because of embezzlement anyway. And so he's, you know, practiced at being pretty secretive. And so in his eyes, the best way to do this was to just kind of get in front of the secret, you know, instead of having right. Sun find out from just this random person where she could suspect, you know, oh, I wonder what happened, you know, was it him, you know, the brother, you know, he wanted to get in front of it and tell her himself, and he had confidence in himself to sell the story, which he was very bad at.
Yeah, I was like, dude, what, I mean, like,
it did make me wonder, know. Like, how did he get away with it?
I still don't know whether he did it or not, but, like, either way, he's a horrible person.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I think. Well, first, I think the actor who played the brother was really good, because, like, he was, like, acting like a douche who's lying, but, like, a bad liar, so he's, like, acting like a bad liar, but he's also acting in the character, and I was just, like, acting.
So many levels. Acting.
It reminds me of, like, in Harry Potter, where, like, it's Helena Bonham Carter acting like Hermione, acting like Bellatrix, and it's just beautiful.
Good stuff.
Acting. But I'll tell you, I think that the brother did it. And I'll tell okay. you why. It's because the only other people involved would be him, or Whispers, and Whispers doesn't know, I don't think, about her yet. She hasn't had any like medical
contact.
Issues or like, yeah, we haven't seen any evidence of that. So from my perspective, I think it was the brother, and he's just really bad at hiding it.
Okay.
That's not like a spoiler thing. That's just like my opinion as I was watching the first time.
I don't know. I guess, like, my reason for... I mean, and here's the thing. I totally get that, right? But, like, part of me is, like, what is the logic in, like, telling her in... like, I guess, like, yeah, like, getting in front of the problem and, like... So, it's not, like, a random person telling her, oh, your father is dead, and they think that it could either be suicide or murder, and then she's gonna automatically assume the... Like, either way, isn't she gonna automatically assume the brother? Like, I don't see the utility of it.
I don't know. I think... I guess he kind of oversold his acting ability. I think he
yeah.
had confidence that he could have just played it off and been like, oh, I'm sorry, this is such a bad situation, but it wasn't me.
Well, yeah, if he killed him, then I'm so, like, then that beatdown was absolutely justified, and it was so glorious.
It was,
like,
it was justified regardless, let's be honest.
Yeah, no, but, like, it was even more justified and even better, like...
Mm.
Yes, beat his face into a freaking bloody pulp, because he totally deserves it.
Yeah. I've never seen Parks and Rec, but I've seen, like, a lot of clips from it. And there's this one clip from it. I'm pretty sure it's from Parks and Rec, where, like, I don't know anything about it, really, but there's this scene
okay.
where these two characters are trying not to be suspicious, and they start just singing about don't be suspicious, don't be suspicious. And, like, that's all I was thinking as he was giving his, like, story. I was like, don't, like,
you gotta post that in the links, man.
Yeah.
I gotta watch that video.
Yeah, because I'm like, don't be suspicious. And I'm like, because, like, you can, I feel like you could see through him and be like, that's all he's singing. He's like, just sell this. Don't
well,
be suspicious.
Well, yeah, like, for
you
me, watching him was super weird, because, like, he was in these dark shadows, and, like, His something about his facial expression was, like, really off. Like, so, yeah, like, I felt like, would you, like, there's some, like, bad lying acting or something weird going on. But, like, part of me still, like, I still don't, I will never understand taunting victims. Like, they're just going to suspect you and try to come after you. Like, I don't understand that. But, whatever. I guess, like, yeah, maybe he is a true psychopath or sociopath or something. It was just really weird. don't be suspicious. Episode title? But yeah. And then Sun beats him up. And I was like, I wonder if there's going to be any repercussions for this, like, in the jail, because I would think that she'd be put in solitary, but was she in solitary before, so, like, for beating up that other woman, so, like, I don't really know if they can make her punishment even worse, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not like anyone else is going to come visit her, so it's not like if they take her visiting rights away, like, there's not anyone who's going to come see her, so, well, you know. Yeah. Unless, like, I guess, like, theoretically, her mentor or coach could see her, but, like, that hasn't happened, so, nah.
Okay, I just want to clarify. It was Parks and Rec, but it's the extended producer's cut, I think.
Extended what?
Producer's cut.
Oh, okay.
So, I'll post that in the show notes.
Yeah,
It is glorious. You'll enjoy it.
Any more on Sun, or do you want to move on?
No, the only thing else is, you remember, like, in the fight scene a few episodes ago, you know, like, the guards, like, let her, like, you know, beat up the other prisoner for, like, a few minutes before they start interfering. This definitely right. happened again, because they were just like,
they have a slow reaction time, seconds. Okay? It's not their fault.
Yeah,
they just kidding. It's totally their fault.
Yeah. But that's all for Sun. Do you have anyone you would like to see?
So who do we have remaining? We have Riley, Will, Nomi, and
pretty much everyone.
Wolfgang and Kala. Wow, we're like an hour in and we still haven't talked about like most
but
of the cast.
I feel like, I don't know, Caphias was like the big story for me.
Sure.
Yeah, we do get other stuff, but that was kind of the most complex and the most important.
Right.
But do you want to talk about Nomi?
Sure. So, but they just got back to the apartment, I want to say, yep. right? And then she doesn't have any equipment, but she wants to help Riley because she knows that Riley's in a bind.
Yeah.
So somehow Bug magically shows up and helps them.
Yeah, I love the scene when he, they're opening the door and, like, Almanita's, like, standing there.
Oh, the lighter and the hairspray? Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's great.
I kind of am tempted to try that, but I don't want to burn my own hand off.
Don't do it. Just look up, like, YouTube of people doing
it. Yeah, I should do that.
That'll fulfill it, hopefully.
Yes, it will.
One line that I just thought was, the bug suspected foul play. Anyone who refers to himself in third person is so, like, bad, it's good, you know?
People speaking in the third person, I don't even know what's going on anymore. I'm like, you are on another planet. I don't know what's happening.
You've lost all sense of self.
What?
You've lost all sense of self.
Right? So, like, Bug randomly shows up, so I was like, Deus Ex Machina much? But whatever. Bug shows up somehow. And decides to help Nomi out, because he's like, well, I noticed that all the stuff that you had was on sale, and I just bought it, and here it is. Yeah, so what, they basically. Hack into the... What?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, and then Nomi puts out a fake wanted poster that says she's in Australia to try to throw whispers off their tail. Probably didn't work, because by the end of the episode, we kind of realized there's other stuff going on, but trying to buy some more time. And, I mean, it kind of works because it does disrupt the communications when, like, the doctors in Iceland are like, oh, where's so-and-so? And they're like, oh, he hasn't shown up yet.
Yeah.
Or whatever. So it is working. Them. Yeah, the delays are happening. I mean, I know it's all getting very jumbled now, but, like, I liked how, like, Will was kind of holding on to Riley as she was sick, and then kind of Nomi was seeing that. It was, like, a really interesting experience.
Yeah.
You know?
Because, like, in the very beginning, even, of Nomi, you know, Will is there, and they're kind of talking. And I like that, like, Almanita basically just points to, like, what's blank space for her, and she's like, is that the cop? Like,
yeah, like, Almanita's looking at Nomi, who's looking at Will and Riley, and Will's looking at Riley. It's like really weird.
Yeah, and then especially even when Jonas shows up, you're just like, who can see who? This is confusing.
Right.
But, like, it wasn't too confusing. Like, it was
no, okay. I don't think it was confusing. I thought it was, like, a really interesting thing. It's very specific to this show, you know?
Yeah.
And I liked it. And it wasn't even, didn't Call even get in on that, where she's, like, noticing that Riley's sick or something?
Yeah, even, yeah. She gets to stand there for a little while.
She gets to what?
She gets to stand there for a little while.
Right. But yeah, I mean, like, we do have some weird, I mean, it's just sad seeing her, seeing Riley's father playing, like, that ukulele next to her, and then also, like, kind of that weird moment where we got Irsa comes back and is like, I told you this would happen, and, like, it's really weird and mysterious, and, like.
Yeah. Yeah, Riley, yeah. You know, she's been not with the program, for the episode, but she, you know, we basically just see characters around her, you know, basically reacting to what's happened. You do get a little bit from Riley in that, you know, we see her.
Oh, the flashback.
Yeah, walking alone in the snow. And then we see, like, it seems like she's kind of reliving, like, you know, her worst memory.
The accident, right?
Yeah. So,
yeah, with the husband and the child.
Yeah, and we also see, like, a car skidding down the road in the snow.
Right.
So that's not good. She doesn't seem very cool with that.
Yeah. And, you know, the doctors are like, oh, there's some, like, weird abnormal brain activity. I don't understand what's happening. And she's not sedated or something, even though we, like, put her on tons of sedatives and, like, there's all this stuff happening.
Yeah, and so the line that they said was, kids today have a huge tolerance for drugs.
I mean, they're not wrong.
Yeah, Riley,
and also,
no,
they're not wrong about Riley.
No, yeah,
either.
Riley's a druggie.
Yeah, so that was interesting. And then we get, you know, I don't know if it's, like, too weird to bring in Jonas and Whispers now, but, like, we get them talking to Will, and, like, you know, like, Whispers is saying, like, you gotta say enough to make them believe what you're saying, and then, like, Jonas is kind of telling them that Whispers is there, but, like, also kind of not, and it's just really strange.
Yeah, it's very strange. Like, you don't know who, you know, it's really hard to tell what side Jonas is on. Like, Whispers is always the bad guy, and, you know, the Sensei cluster are the good guys, but Jonas is really kind of ambiguous, because it's like,
right,
you don't know, because, you know, yeah, Whispers is like, don't tell them too much, and then Jonas is like, hey, I'm gonna tell you.
Whispers is here.
Yeah, like, it's very weird.
It is weird. You don't know where, yeah, we don't know where he
but,
is.
You know, Nomi says that he trusts him because he basically saved her life, which he did, you
right,
know,
right.
You know, when she was going to get lobotomized. But that's actually from Whispers' fault in the first place, so it's very confusing.
Yeah. So, yeah, the whole, sorry, guys. The whole, like, clear-cut allegiances, or, like, in this case, not clear-cut allegiances, like,
yeah.
whose side is Jonas's, whose side is Jonas on? We don't really know the answer to that.
What do you think?
Any more about those, like, I guess, three?
Well, what do you think about Jonas? Whose side do you think he's on?
I don't know. I don't, like, I don't try to, like, whenever I, like, consume media, like, I don't try to figure out the mystery or figure out who's, like, I just let it happen. I mean, I might get, like, angry or emotionally invested in stuff, but, like, I honestly could not care less which side Jonas is on. I just want to see the story unfold and let the chips fall where they may. So I wasn't really analyzing it. I just think if I'm to pick a side, like, right now, I would say he's probably on the Sensate side. And, you know, Whispers is just right there with his, you know, electrodes on his head and other ish. So, like, I think he's just, I mean, it's not like Jonas is talking of his own free will. I know that doesn't necessarily determine what side someone's going to be on, but, like, I figure, yeah, he saved Nomi, and he probably has their best interest in mind, so I'm gonna lean towards Jonas being good, but, like, honestly, he is fairly ambiguous, and I don't really know, nor do I really care what side he's on. I'll just see what happens, you know? I'll just roll with it and see what happens next episode.
Yeah. But, you know, they mentioned that Whispers knows what Will's next move is gonna be, you know?
Wait, what? Say that again?
Whispers knows what Will's next move is going to be, which is why.
Oh,
Whispers
right,
is so
yeah,
because
he's gonna go try to see her in Iceland, like in real life.
Yeah, and so, like, Whispers and Will are talking through Jonas, and It's just so loud here right now.
Oh. Do you want a break for a little bit?
No, I think it'll be quieter again.
Okay.
But so Whispers and Will are speaking through Jonas, which, you know, essentially is trusting Jonas to relay information between them accurately.
It's like a game of telephone.
Yeah, it's very weird. You know, in this case, Jonas has, I wouldn't say he has all the power, because he clearly doesn't, but he has some power to kind of influence what's going on.
Sure.
And, you know, Will is going to play right into Whisper's hands, because that's all, you know,
the only Whispers thing he can think of. Because Whispers is like the puppet
master. Right, but there's no way that Will isn't going to go to Iceland, right? Because that's what he says. He's like, I have to go, because Riley.
Oh, Will.
Oh, Will.
Oh, well. Stupid pun.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, it's like, yeah, Whispers is the puppet master, whatever, but, like, even I knew that Will was going to be, like, on the next plane to Iceland, so, like, I wouldn't call that a puppet master. I would call that, like, being decent at reading a human.
Sure.
But, I mean, so that's really an unresolved plot, so that's, I think, going to be a pretty big thing in the next episode, because this is really the main plot. Yay!
Yay!
Took us long enough.
What happened to Sarah Petrell, but oh well. Who cares about her?
Do you remember, in the first few episodes I was talking about Sarah Petrell, it's like, I honestly have no idea what happened to her. And I think this is why, I had no recollection that was even a part of the story. And I think this is why, essentially, because we just, you know,
we lose plot points.
Yeah, it's spread out so much. And so, like,
yeah.
It's really easy to forget things. You know, like, I think a lot of the individual plots are somewhat more memorable than this one, honestly.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, Kaffee is staring down, you know, drug dealers and drug lords. And, you know, Sun gets thrown into prison because of something she didn't do on her...
Right. Kala faints at her own wedding because she doesn't want to marry so-and-so.
Yeah. It's just, you know, like, yes, this is interesting and, like, I'm glad to be getting answers and whatever, but it's just, it's hard to measure up to some of the other things that have been set up.
Yeah. I wrote down, I like Nomi's cup. I think that was when we first see that first shot of her apartment, she has a sick cup, and I was like, wow, I want that cup. It's, like, the most random thing ever, but... yeah, I don't know. I like staring at objects and being like, ah, oh, they should turn that into merchandise. I would totally buy it. anyway, stupid random aside. I'm trying to think, is there anything else that I want to talk about with, anything? Oh, I had something about Sun that I forgot to mention.
Go.
I guess I can bring that up.
Go for it.
But, I kind of like how they didn't go, I remember we talked about stereotypes earlier, in the season of our show, we talked about stereotypes, and Sun may or may not being a stereotype. But I kind of liked how although it wasn't perfectly executed, I like how it wasn't like Sun had to repress her emotions or anything.
Yeah, I
agree. I feel like she was doing a lot of that in the beginning of the show. And, like, one of the ways she's grown, she doesn't repress her emotions anymore. But, you know, that could be good or bad, right? Because, like, you don't want to actually kill 20 people because you can't repress your emotions. But...
Yeah, there are different degrees of that.
But, like, I like how, like, when she... Her ending, like, the way she ended the episode and tied it all together when she was talking to Kala, right? It was like, you have to fight for what you want. And I'm not going to, like, hide away or anything. Which I appreciate, even though it was kind of flawed in the execution.
Yeah. I really love...
Does that make sense?
No, yeah. I definitely agree with you. I loved when she was punching the wall, too. That was just...
Yeah, like, I was grimacing because, like,
there was a lot of blood, yeah. But it was just, yeah. You're not just, like, panning over her and she's just, like, her eyes are filled with emotion and she sits there silently.
Kala!
Yeah, that's a very good
explanation. I mean, they're basically the antithesis to each other, right? Like, Kala is kind of... sad puppy dog eyes. Oh, sorry, I gotta thank AV Club for that. AV Club was like she said that, like, Kala has snatched, like, Tina Desai has snatched the sad puppy dog eyes award from, like, David Boreanaz or whatever his name is.
Don't get me started on David Boreanaz, okay?
But, like, he, you know, like, he, apparently he does the sad puppy eyes things really well, too.
Yeah, he does.
But Tina Desai has totally stolen the crown from him.
But the reason why he's really good at it is that he's, like, really, like, large. Like, he's tall and wide. And so it looks very out of place on him. And so it's very interesting. But that's a total aside.
But, like, Tina does it so well. The woman who plays Kala?
Yeah, I figured.
Anyway. Yeah. So,
do you want to get
any
into
more about Nomi, Will, and Riley?
No, not really. We can get into Kala, because
Kala and Max.
Yeah. They are the tied pair at the end, but they're not, not in the beginning, because Kala just got her own little separate issues.
Yeah. So Kala finally talks to Rajan.
It's a miracle. It's a Christmas
miracle. And that's,
miracle.
Right? And that's leads to something real interesting, because she's like, wait, you knew this whole time that your father did not want you to marry me. And he's like, yeah, I totes did. And we're like, what?
Yeah. And so, for the first time, we start seeing some kind of cracks in Rajan's facade, basically. Because, you know, up to this point, he's kind of been perfect
the
dude.
The perfect person.
And so we kind of, and, you know, Kala starts asking, you know, like, why do you want to be with me, you know? Like, is it just because you want to spite your father or whatever? Was I an act of rebellion for you? And I think that's
right.
That's a decent interpretation, honestly.
I was glad that we finally saw Kala, like, getting kind of angry and riled up about, you know, while speaking to Rajan, because I feel like she's been so passive this whole time. So I was like, yeah, girl, you ask him those questions. Do you interrogate? Like, I don't know. I was happy that she was starting to question things, you know?
Yeah. I think that was really important for her.
It was a powerful moment for me.
Yeah. Because, you know, she's finally, and it does hint at the end of this as well. Like, hallelujah, we're finally going to get to the end of this.
Thank God. It's been, like, the worst, draggiest, like, plot point ever. Like, I told you from the beginning. I was like, once they were, like, arranged marriage in episode one, I was like, oh, God, please don't do this. Please don't do this. And they did. And I was like, why? Why?
They did it.
Way. Anyway. But yeah. I was like, why? Seriously, why?
It's a problem. But
I hate arranged marriage plot points. Like, I really do.
Yeah.
Sorry. But yeah, so she speaks to him, gets some new perspective on things. And then she goes to the temple, right? And that's interesting, too.
Yeah, I mean, but before we get into that, I'd like to just stay on the conversation she has with Rajan for just a few more minutes. Because,
yeah.
Well, first, the location is really pretty where they're talking. Like, you know, kind of, I think it's on the water. Yeah, I think so. But, you know, we also learn that Rajan's father is going to be okay.
See, I don't get the show, man. People who should be dead are not dead, and people who should be alive are not alive. And I'm just like, the what is the logic to any of this? Like, the father-in-law should be dead. Felix, by all accounts, should also be dead. Cathia should be dead. Most of the characters in this cast should be dead, yet somehow they're not. Like, what is happening?
Yeah, I mean, like, I understand keeping the sensate cluster alive, you know?
Right. Like, that's like a traditional narrative thing. Like, you're not gonna kill off your main characters.
Yeah, I'll bend the rules for them. Like, even
unless
with
they're super, like, gutsy about stuff like that. But
yeah.
Still.
Yeah, like, if they fall from, like, a 50-story building, I'm gonna start questioning things. But
how are the secondary characters not dying?
It's really weird, because, you know, we're getting all this violence with them.
It's like the anti-Joss Whedon.
That's actually very accurate. It's actually somewhat funny in that when I am rewatching this show, and, you know, I've forgotten a decent chunk of it, I don't remember these characters surviving. Like, I remember them dying. Like, I'm, because, you know, like, the violent moment is very memorable, but, you know, like, the after effects are not quite as memorable, and I'm like, no one's gonna survive that,
right?
I mean, they do describe this particular survival as a miracle, and, you know, like, his mother attributes it to, you know, prayer and whatever.
But, it, like, it's happened too often. Like, yes. Felix is also still alive. somehow. Yeah,
it's really those
and, like,
two.
I don't understand, like, there's people who are alive who should not be alive in the show. I'm like, I don't, like, they did it too much. Like, maybe one character would be okay, but, like, Kabaka's still alive, his daughter's still alive. Like, how is anyone still alive? Like, you're telling me the only person who died is, like, the rich South Korean businessman? Like, come on, guys. Come on.
Well, I mean, people have died, but...
Who? I can't remember them.
Wolfgang's enemies.
Right, but they're not, like... I don't consider them, like, secondary characters, like... I don't know. I don't want to be like, you have to kill off the secondary characters who are important to the main cast members, but, like, I kind of want to be like that. Someone should be dead. Like,
someone should be dead. Know. No, I agree. I think, you know, that's... The way that they did it was like, you know, we're not going to kill off the cluster at this point, you know, especially in the middle of the season. Like, no one's going to kill off the cluster in the middle of the season, especially.
That could be a really interesting thing to do in season two.
Yeah. But, you know, they're not going to do that. We knew that when we were watching. It's not like you're going to kill off one of the main characters 4 episodes in. I mean, you could, like, but it would be surprising. You know what show did that somewhat well? It was a secondary character, but Buffy killed off a secondary character, like, 4 episodes into the first season. I was, like, so impressed.
Dang.
But my point is that, you know, like, they had to have tension. And so, you know, they're like, okay, let's threaten the secondary characters because, you know, they might die. But they still wanted them to stay around. So it was just, if a show can't kill off its characters, it starts losing its tension very quickly.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of, yeah. Because, like, I don't see what further purpose do Felix and the fiancé's father have to the plot. Like, but the fiancé's father did his thing. He should be dead now. I don't see how he can further contribute to the plot.
No.
Like, he's gonna make things more complicated. Like, okay, that's not fun, though.
I mean, I guess I could see him coming back in, like, season two and being, like, revenge of the father-in-law. I guess I could sort of see that, but, yeah... He doesn't really have much of a bearing on Kala anymore, especially if they're not going to be together.
Yeah, I want her to have agency and be her own person. I want her to make her own choices. I don't need him, Mr. Oh, like, I am too good for Hinduism to come back and just, like, I don't need him back.
Yeah. I mean...
Trust me.
I can see, like... I can kind of see, like, why Felix has to stay alive, because they need someone for Wolfgang to play off of besides Kala. But, like, you should have thought of that before you basically killed him and then were like, nah, JK. You know?
Wait, I missed most of that? You were saying...
I mean, yes, I can see why they kept Felix alive, but, like, you know, they need someone for Wolfgang to play off of, but they should have thought of that before they threatened him, like they did.
I it's really bad because, like, the first time you spoke, I was typing something, and the second time you spoke, a car rushed by, and I couldn't hear what you said, so I'm just going to be like, okay, I agree with what you said, but I don't know that I did not hear anything you just said.
Okay, wait, let me just say it again, and because okay. It was sort of loud here.
Okay. Sorry, guys, you'll hear this 3 times, I only heard this, like, once.
No, I'll write down the code, and because okay. it was a little loud. So what I was saying was that, essentially, I understand the necessity for Felix to be kept alive, because Wolfgang really doesn't have anyone else to play off of, especially, you can see, you know, he's going down for a big confrontation with basically everyone we know from Wolfgang's plot.
Right.
So I understand the necessity of keeping Felix alive to have someone for Wolfgang to play off of, and I think he would go to a much darker place if Felix actually does die.
Right.
But you should have thought of that before you put Felix into a threatening situation like this. Like, you could
right.
have
give him more friends or backup or something.
Well, I wasn't even gonna say that. I was just gonna say, even the situation where Felix basically almost dies, like, just make it, like, slightly less death, you know? And then I would sort of believe it.
But that's not the Wachowski style, right? They gotta go all the way with their action and death scenes.
Slightly less death, man.
Slightly less death.
If you're gonna bring the
characters
back, you gotta make me believe they're gonna survive.
Yeah. It's just too much. And I hate that. I mean, I hate that that's, like, a TV thing where it's like they're not dead unless they're like dead, like lying on the ground, eyes rolled to the back of their heads, shot through the head 3 times, dead. And then even then, somehow they can still magically come back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I hate that. I hate that stupid, like, they're not dead until they're, like, absolutely 100%, 50% dead, you know?
Yeah, there was a character on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., actually, who kept coming back, like, over and over again. God. The character was Ward, and he came back in different iterations, and they had an okay explanation each time. They were, you know, it was, you know, tiring and annoying, but it almost sort of worked. But, you know, spoilers for the last season, but it was 6 months ago now, so I'm assuming anyone who wanted to see it who have seen it. Basically, he gets blown, like, he gets stuck on a spaceship and gets blown into the sun, basically. God. And, like, at that point, I was... No. He's done now, I think. But, like, that was how final his real death had to be. Because, like, you can't escape that. He was blown into the sun or whatever.
But I still heard you when you said, I think it's final. Like, think. He could still conceivably come back.
He could, yeah.
Which is ridiculous. Like, yeah, I don't know. I guess it's, like, weird talking about how, like, I think that secondary character should die, but I also don't think that people should come back. Like, I think I think death is a cheap way to make us feel emotions.
That's fair.
In TV and film. So I want it to be done well. I want it to be executed well and not just be, here's this thing and now you feel something. Like, I want there to be a purpose and a reason for why they're not coming back, I guess.
Well,
and for, I want for their death to, like, achieve something, fulfill something, like, story-wise, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe that's too much to ask. It probably is.
No, but, it's, like, really not.
I just see too much, like, where, like, people are just kind of using death as a cheap thing to kind of make us feel emotions rather than kind of advance a storyline or anything. You know? Like, I don't know.
No, I definitely agree. A lot of shows do this, and so I can't fault this one specifically. You know,
right. It's a general thing.
Problem, I think. Yeah, and I think that's just part of the TV times that we live in.
Right.
A lot of good TV, though. I can't complain too much.
That's true.
One thing is in the scene where, like, Kala has the showdown with Rajan, I don't know if you noticed, but, like, the shade of her lips, like, I don't know if it was, like, lip. It must be lipstick, I guess. But the shade of her lips was so gorgeous. And I just wanted to mention that. Like, goals. I don't know.
I think I might have noticed that, but I didn't really write it down. But sure.
It was so beautiful. Like, my lips are pale. Like, I can respect. That's really pretty. I couldn't pull that
off. Better than mine. I don't know how we're getting on this topic, but anyway.
I know how. I brought it up.
Well, yeah. But.
But yeah. So, okay. Kala goes to the temple, right?
Right, and then she kind of confronts the people who just stabbed her father-in-law.
And they're super happy
about things. And they're like, oh, you brought him to us. And she's like, okay, you need to back up and stop bothering me. And then, like, Will kind of helps her escalate the situation, as it were.
Yeah, I really liked when she was actually walking up to the scene and, like, the shot's kind of, like, looking down at her going up the stairs.
Mm.
And it was just really
pretty.
Oh,
that was an overhead shot, right?
Yeah.
I mentioned that. I wasn't sure which overhead shot, but I just wrote great above head shot. It just looked really cool.
Yeah, it looked really cool. I don't know if there was, like, a film purpose for this. I mean, I'm sure there probably was, but it just looked really nice.
Yeah. It looked cool. I guess it was setting up the scene where she was going, the people who were there.
Yeah. And so I think, I don't know, for me, the first time I saw, like, the picture of the father-in-law, like, it's like, oh, you're, like, being nice to him, essentially. Like, like, you know, this act of violence shouldn't have taken place at this temple. Like, I feel like that's, like, the normal human response to something like that. But they're like, no.
When I first saw that, I was confused because I'm kind of reminded of, East Asian ancestral shrines or stuff like that where... if someone passes away that we care about, we hang a picture of them up and burn incense and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, so is he dead, or are they wishing that he's dead, or something? Like, what's happening here? I was confused.
Yeah.
Then we quickly got to what they were actually there for.
Yeah, so, like...
Which was praying for his demise.
Which is...
Or something.
Nice. Very cool. I guess they hadn't heard about his survival, because, like, if he survives, you gotta think that he's gonna come back to this temple with a vengeance, like...
And destroy you.
Like, you know that, yeah. Right? Like, it's... Don't be so happy. If you want to be happy, like, go to the hospital and finish the job.
I guess they were celebrating that he was severely injured.
Yeah, well, but... be happy now, but you are going to pay for this later. Just trust me.
Oh, absolutely.
And by trust me, that isn't a... Like, that's... I don't know anything. I'm just guessing.
Right.
But basically, they say that, you know, she's one of them. Kala is one of them. And
they're like, heck no, I'm not one of you. And then that kind of brought me back to the previous episode when they're talking about humans versus us or whatever.
Yeah.
That's kind of what my mind flashed back to. So.
They're the humans. They're not good enough.
Please.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I mean, I like that Kala's finally making us, like, taking, like, standing up for herself, but also it is kind of weird that she's kind of relying on, you know, other sensates. So it's like, is it really agency?
I mean, a lot of the other sensates have relied on other people, but yeah, it was a little, I don't know. I felt like she should have gotten more of a chance to take care of the situation herself before Will kind of jumps
in. Yeah, I don't
know.
I just don't think, like, in certain situations, like, I understand if you need gun skills or, you know, machete wielding skills or whatever, like, I understand, but, like, I think she could have done that same thing on her own. I guess maybe it's just the confidence boost or the psychological boost of it, but, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It didn't quite work for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then, this is really the first interaction between Kala and Will.
Right.
So, like, he's saying that he's in Chicago, but my thoughts are with Riley, which I just thought was really kind of... Well, I don't think he said that line exactly, but essentially that.
Something like that, yeah.
And that was just really sweet. I don't know. I really just like Will and Riley together. They kind of fit pretty naturally.
Yeah, they work.
They have really... it's really kind of like puppy love, first crush kind of relationship at this point, but...
Yeah.
It's still sweet.
Yeah.
And then...
So, any more on Kala?
Well, I mean, it is kind of tied with Wolfgang in that... you know, she's crying over Wolfgang when she's, I think, at work. And Sun is saying that, you know, crying won't help him.
Right, that's at the very end, right?
Yeah, that's the very end.
Taking action.
Yeah, and so the end of the episode is essentially Sun is like, I take everything that I'm feeling, and she pushes it into her fist, and then she fights for it. I'm like...
Yeah, I mean, like, I think with Wolfgang, just to get to him real quick, like, you know, he's in front of the gate. He's about to go in, and Kala's like, you know, don't do this. She name drops the episode title.
Yeah.
You turn the wheel, everything changes, right? But he's like, you know, I have to do this, and I don't think you understand, but I have to do this. And, like, then they kiss, and it's just really sad, but also...
Well, yeah.
Like, kind of hot, but also kind of sad.
Yeah, and there's like, aw. You know, I don't think they've kissed before, right? So...
Yeah, right. Well, did they almost kiss
in the rain?
Oh, was it all right? Because then Felix totally blocked them from kissing because he like interrupted the moment.
Yeah. So Wolfgang has to go and get Felix, make sure that he's safe, and so he drops him off to some kind of other hospital where he won't be
private kind of.
And there's a really sweet moment when he's like quoting
Conan.
Yeah,
and then he calls him Conan. Yeah. And it's cute.
It was really
nice. I appreciated that. I appreciated that.
Yeah, and so then he goes to this beautiful, sick mansion. Like, I don't know exactly what it is, but it looks really fancy from the outside.
Right.
Like, I would live there. and so, yeah, Kala shows up, and we get the title. And, I mean, it's kind of an interesting idea, you know, about, you know, what's fate and what's... Because, like, for Wolfgang, like, he's like, this is my fate. He doesn't say that essentially, like, you know.
Mm.
And Kala's like, no, you can choose it. But everything that Wolfgang has gone through has kind of gotten him to this moment. And so, well, I mean, that's every moment. But, you know,
sure.
Everything's kind of built up to itself. And he doesn't see any way that the situation is going to work. unless
well, yeah, because he knows that if he runs, they're just gonna keep coming after him, right?
Right.
So he has to destroy them.
Destruction. yeah. So for him, this is the only way this ends. It's almost like Cepheus, like he has to go and confront, you know, the whole situation.
Yeah, he has to confront the monster. He has to take care of the situation.
Yeah, because it's gonna be a problem otherwise.
If anything, none of the senseis are like Sun's brother, where he just runs away from responsibility. Everyone has to face up to whatever their main problem is, you know.
Yeah, it's been rough for Wolfgang. He's had a trying few weeks, I think. But he's ready to kind of have it all be over, and
yeah,
you know, I did think it was kind of, I don't know, like. I understand Kala's perspective, but, like, it also kind of isn't her place to kind of be interfering with his life, kind of.
Right. But we see it's, like, she, like, you know, has, like, she, like, is in love with him and doesn't want him to die.
No, yeah, I definitely understand her perspective. Right. Like, I, of all the sensates, like, Kala's the one that I kind of relate to the most, and I really like mm-hmm. her character the most. Mm-hmm. She kind of feels more real than some of the... you know, the people with the crazy abilities and whatever.
Sure.
So, like, I definitely understand, like, she doesn't want him to be in trouble and she doesn't want anything to happen to him. But, you know, from our perspective as the viewers, we've seen this whole thing be building as the season progresses, you know? And
yeah,
this is the way it has to end. Right. It isn't as There's simple no other way. As, you know, just turning around.
Right.
You can't just leave. I wouldn't call it naive of her, because I wouldn't call it naive. It's just, it's
wishful thinking.
It's, to me, it more spoke of how, even though they like each other, Kala and Wolfgang, and even all of the senseis, are still kind of strangers.
Yeah. Because she doesn't, like, she knows some stuff, but she doesn't know everything.
No, she definitely doesn't. I don't think she, I mean, does she know about the whole deal with the, rocket launcher in the previous episode? I mean,
lol.
I don't know.
That was still a pretty amazing moment,
it
though.
Was. It was pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah, because.
So is that it for Sensei?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is that, you know. Oh, I'm just looking at the rest of my notes, and Kala, you know, asks him not to, Wolfgang not to go in, and Wolfgang says that there are things that you'll never understand about, my world, and there's things that you'll, yeah. you know, strike that, reverse it.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of getting at what I'm saying. But, you know, it's very sweet, and it's coming from a really cute place, and I still ship them a lot. And that's
it. We will ship it forever.
OTP. That's all I really have for this one, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can go through my notes. I don't think I have... I think I have, like, weird little random comments about stuff, but, like, nothing...
Nothing too big.
Absolutely necessary.
We covered it front to back pretty well. It was a really good episode, in my opinion. It really gears me up for the last episode. When I watched it, you know, kind of on my own, I believe I watched, like, the last 4 or 5 episodes in the span of, like... a day. Like, I
that's intense.
I was, you know, I was watching, you know, kind of slowly at first, but then, you know, it starts really getting exciting, and, you know, when I finish the episode, all I want to do is keep watching.
Right.
I'm like, what is gonna happen with Riley? What's, you know, what's gonna happen in Iceland?
I have a threshold. Like, I can only watch so many episodes before I give up. Like, there's no way I could have binge watched the whole show in one take, in one sitting.
No, I couldn't do that either. It was a little too intense for me, but generally. I can with different shows. I definitely have binge-watched shows before, and, you know, I've watched 10 hours of TV a day before. Not, like, on a... I can't, like, do that consistently. Like, that's, you know... But, like, on an off day, I could probably do that. Depending on the show. Some shows kind of lend itself well, I think. And they're, you know, when they're, like, emotionally draining, I absolutely can't.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But yeah, overall, good episode. I am excited to get to that finale. I was tempted to watch the finale right after I finished this episode, but then I was like, no, I kind of want to, like, record the episode first. and then get to the finale. But I am excited to see what the last episode will be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be next week. It's very exciting.
Yes, next week we will be back with our final episode
of Sense8. We'll be back after that.
Season 1. Unless I have the numbers wrong. Like, this isn't like a 13 episode thing, right?
No, no.
Because God knows I've been wrong before.
Yes, we all know that. No.
Thanks.
No.
For the vote of confidence.
There's one more episode, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so there's one episode left. I'm looking forward to it because I haven't seen it. Melissa has, so
but
she
I don't
knows.
Remember it.
She doesn't remember it, but
there are a few pieces of it I remember. But...
Are they doing a Christmas special? I feel like I heard that there was somewhere that they
did read about that, not extensively. I hope, yes, hopefully.
So yeah, that's cool.
So by the time we finish this, like, we'll almost have that one to watch.
Yeah, no, but yeah, I'm looking forward to finishing off Sense8, and then I don't know what show we're gonna do next. Give me a second, Mom. I'm not sure what show we're gonna do next, but yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah. We'll see what the future holds.
Right. Okay. Well, I gotta sign off. I'm hungry. And
I'm hungry
my mom's
too.
Calling and stuff is happening. So probably it's lunchtime. So I will talk to y'all later. Thanks for listening to our show.
Bye-bye.